understand Dan's importance and plan to attend to it. So, but tell me, I need to know more about you. I need to know, how did this affect your personal life?
Oh, okay. Well, it was in as much as I was single at the time, and to the extent my law firm found it feasible to allow me to participate in all this, it was thrilling in the sense that hardly a day would go by that you did not have to deal with this or think about it in some way. And I, because I have an interest in politics and I'm a lawyer and like to think of myself as a good citizen, I found it to be extremely challenging and interesting to try and get some reforms enacted into law to support the people who were doing that. I found it personally, I was sad a lot of the time, I think, now I look back on it, even though I'm pretty much a happy and positive individual, that I may have been more depressed than I realized. Because I think some of it rubbed off on me, but since I didn't live there, I had a home in Anchorage, but I was there a lot, yeah. I felt like, oh, well, I get to escape periodically. And so I would. Eventually, I was back, and kind of even before RCAC got started, I was back at my job. And I had other things I had to do mm-hmm. as well. At one time, the city council and my bosses talked about me being the acting city manager because Mr. Moore was going to leave. But it was decided that would be, we couldn't act as attorneys and take that role on and all that. But I would have found it interesting to do. I kind of regret that the friendships have kind of gone because I couldn't stay active in the organization indefinitely.
Sure.
I was extremely gratified that I was the leader of the organization for a while and allowed to take a leadership role.
Incredibly unique opportunity.
I always tell people I'm good at two things. One is washing dishes and the other is running meetings. And I did feel that I was able to take over, and at least the meetings went better and we got more done. The whole separate subject of the relationship with Alyeska is worthy of a tome in and of itself.
Well, let's hear it.
The unique nature of the contract, which again is a credit to Ann Rothy and Michelle O'Leary and people who really were actively involved in trying to get something going with Alyeska before the spill, but which morphed into RCAC eventually. And then to have it enacted into law was the real coup, because no one hardly ever gets anything from the oil industry in law that they don't want. So it was a big coup. It really was. And it took a lot of very skillful, hard political work to get it there. And
let me interject this question.
Sure.
These folks, I mean, not speaking of anyone in particular, but just in general, did you feel an adversarial sense?
Absolutely, yeah.
To the point of rudeness or just...
Oh, I think there were... I tried to act as professionally as possible and was even forced in the position of having to discipline some people for... very ill-considered remarks that were made that were kind of poisoned the atmosphere of what was already a pretty adversarial relationship. But I always subscribe to the view, and I'm pretty confident that the other senior leadership, I guess now you would say, would agree, which is that it's meant to be adversarial. It's meant to be arm's length. It's meant to be skeptical. It's meant to be pointed. It's meant to be not feel good. Mm-hmm. Okay? And there are some things that it's almost like anything else. It taught me a lot about negotiating. It taught me a lot about the pure seductive nature of money, immense money, such as the oil industry possesses, and their global reach. I probably knew it intellectually, but didn't really understand it until I got involved with RCAC, that the global reach of a BP or an Alyeska, which, you know, technically is just their little nonprofit operating company, but symbolically stands for so much. They are immensely powerful people, and they are furthermore unhesitatingly ruthless and unhesitatingly able and willing to use their power. And when you get into the ring with them, you had damn well better be prepared. And I say that, and then I should footnote that by telling you, I was considered to be too soft on them. I was, to a certain faction, I was too compromising and too politically minded and too much of a lawyer, if you will. Okay, so there you have it. And I was always a little, maybe I was. I couldn't afford, as the representative of a city, I could ill afford to say or do anything that would cast either my client or its interest into a shadow. And so, mindful of that constraint, I behaved accordingly. And I think that some people never quite understood that. Bill Walker understood it perfectly, because he and I were both municipal attorneys. And I'm glad that Bill is now, I think Bill's either the president or the general counsel for RCAC. But whatever Bill is doing for the organization now, I think he would verify for you that whatever whoever your interest group or community was that you were representing on the board, you could hardly serve them well if you didn't serve the organization well, and you couldn't serve the organization well if it was all out warfare all the time, because then it's not helping prevent oil spills. It's not reducing safety hazards and pollution emissions from the ballast water treatment plant. It's not doing any of those things, and it's not too good for morale. Although there were people, militant employees in the early days, and militant board members who would, you know, if they were, you know, given a choice, would prefer a militant approach. And the line between adversarial and militant, you know, put a motion on the table and take a vote, because sometimes it would go and sometimes it wouldn't. Yeah. But in general, because the American political system is built around reaching compromise through checks and balances, and that's, I think, the ethos that most people have, I found it easier to operate as, concede when you have to, but make sure you get what you need. And if you, to a political scientist, it could be no less than just a completely absorbing organization and topic to study. And I found it to be the challenge of running a meeting efficiently and productively for 19 people at any given moment, whose agenda was very broad and whose interests weren't always aligned. I found that to be a very challenging and rewarding activity. And I was very proud of my record and as a board president, at least in that regard. And we did accomplish some other major things, too. And so I felt pretty good about it. Overall, it was very positive. We had a little reunion here a year ago, October. I guess October of 2006. Maybe I've lost track of time. Anyway. But Jonathan Wills was visiting from Shetland, and we had Dan and Ann Rothy and Marilyn and Linda and some other veterans, I guess, over to our house, and we had a little party and a reunion. It felt really good. It was nice. But yeah, make no mistake, that contract is unique. It's embodied in federal law. It is a totally one-time opportunity to enact something that puts communities and citizens on somewhat of a level playing field with the oil industry.
According to Walt Parker, that point in time is probably the one and only opportunity that it ever had to pass.
I'd agree. Yeah. And I respect Walt's judgment greatly. And I'd agree with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, I was president of the board and Av was the attorney when we had our first renewal battle with Alyeska.
Uh-huh.
And
what year was that? Was the renewal?
Probably would have been,
2000?
No. We used to have to do it yearly.
Oh, God.
No, we did the certification yearly. The Coast Guard certification was yearly. I think the first renewal was in 92 or 93. Ann would know, or Stan would know. And my God, did they put, I mean, they came at us with guns blazing. They wanted to toss the whole thing. They were going to sue us. They thought the whole thing was a disaster. We had breached the contract in 5,000 ways. They hired a former Attorney General of Alaska, Hal Brown, who happens to be a friend of mine and a friend of Av's, but he did his job. Hired Hal to come after us.
Av.
Who? Av Gross.
Oh, the
He was the general counsel for RCAC.
Okay.
For the up until Bill took the job.
Okay.
For a long, long time, Av was our attorney. And I thought, oh my God, they're going to sue us over this. They're going to sue to end this contract, and they threatened to do it. We just plowed ahead.
Let me ask you this.
Okay.
I know we have...
You must think that we all babble on endlessly. But you can understand the enormity of it to average people.
Oh.
Was just like, oh my God, all of a sudden you're just like in the center of this monstrous thing. And it's on every level of life.
And it goes on.
And it doesn't end, you know.
Yeah.
And so the organization, you know, in its nascent period... was very exciting to be associated with.
Unfortunately, it looks like it is going to end.
Well, I would hope not. I don't think it should. And I would hope that it wouldn't. I would be against that. Whatever needs to be done to keep it going should be done, in my opinion.
But there, I mean, now that it's gone to the Supremes, what can you do? That's it.
Oh, you're talking about Exxon Valdez litigation.
Yeah, no.
I thought you were talking about RCAC itself.
No.
I think, yeah, well, whatever. I mean, the litigation, that's a whole separate subject. I'm sorry, you were going to ask a question.
My subject was going to be toward the tying up of the whole thing, but if you have more to say about anything, the litigation or whatever you want, go ahead.
Well, Stan Stevens, I think, is also a remarkable individual.
Oh, yes.
And that's another person who I've, you know, consider a friend and who probably 99% of the time in agreement with. But one thing I found interesting about Stan and Dan is that... they were could be as stubborn as I am.
And
so we did have some pretty interesting battles along the way. And I have to say of those gentlemen that whether you're in agreement with them or not, you're well advised to listen carefully to what they're saying.
When I hear about Stan putting on his boots and walking the pipeline, it's just like, oh my God, you know, this is a unique place in which we live, and the people who attend to it.
Totally so. Ann Rothy was a tremendous, I think, again, when I think of these people, I think not only of our work, but I think of their moral bearings and their character and just how true they are and what good, really decent people they all are.
Yeah.
And there are good and decent people who work in the oil industry, too, and I don't want to sound like there aren't.
No.
But at the level that they operate on in dealing with something like this, like communities that are affected by their operations directly, they can be, you have to play hardball with them. And if I learned anything from my experience, it was that don't ever fool yourself. And it's not just the oil industry. Maybe the oil industry is a symbol of whatever concentrations of immense power and wealth you may come across. If you're trying to obtain an agreement of some kind with them, be prepared that you're going to be treated ruthlessly. They are completely ruthless, and that ruthlessness comes from knowing that they have immense wealth at their disposal and immense political influence. And one thing that used to bother them more deeply and persistently was the idea that RCAC was using their money to lobby against their interests. Oh, that bugaboo would, that would be endless. So anytime any of us would go to Juneau or Washington or anything, it would be, well, you're lobbying with our money and that's against the contract. I mean, you would hear that just daily.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was a, you know, certain recurring battles never ended. I probably are still going on today.
And, no doubt.
Yeah.
Okay, so I by way of sort of winding this thing up, what would be a glaring omission if it were not in your story?
You mean in terms of, you mean just in terms of how I see it?
Yes. Not necessarily in terms of how you've analyzed it,
right,
18 years later, but
right,
at the time, what, I don't know, I guess we're back.
Well, it was a, you know, for all the, it was a crude experiment in some ways, because you're really throwing together a rather like a mini legislature,
mm-hmm,
you know.
Yeah.
And it wasn't, you know, our political structures, we kind of set it up to run as like a book club initially. I mean, it was sort of small, but it had this immense constituency, and it was very strange. I mean, it took a long time, I think, for lines to be worked out and understood, and how's this really going to work, and how can we be effective? Because we just throw committees of volunteers together, and we were all about direct democracy and direct participation and direct voice, and not having lawyers who are used to representing others be, we, you know, lawyers, we didn't want a lawyer model, even though, you know, we have lawyers, obviously, myself, Bill, other folks. But I think a glaring omission. Well, I don't know about an omission, but I'll tell you what I regret. I regret that, as Walt says, and lots of, I totally agree, that in this unique opportunity we had, politically and legally, that we did not extend the reach of this for the entire pipeline. I honestly and truly believe that would have been the smartest, best thing for Alaska, its people, and even though they may not agree and never will agree, I think it would have been best for the owners and operators of the pipeline itself. It is Alaska's oil, and we are the consumers of it, and we're the ones who should be responsible for it, and we're the ones who have a moral responsibility to keep stuff like Exxon Valdez from happening, and we can only act to enforce our will through agreements and laws that are enforceable against the people who do the work. I really wish, because here's the thing, the oil industry, they don't view it as, oh, there's the pipeline, and then there's the terminal, and then there's the fleet. That is not how they look at it. They are systems engineers and systems planners and systems-oriented people. They run it as a system. Okay? It should be overseen as a system.
Yes.
And I do regret that we didn't, and it was discussed. But it was just was thought, okay, you know, our reach will exceed our grasp here.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
We don't want to lose. We don't want, someone said, we don't want the perfect to be the enemy of the good. So if we can't get a perfect agreement, we're going to get a damn good one. And, you know, I think history will say, yeah, you did. You got a good agreement. Yeah. And you got a good law. And despite all the headaches and the subsequent disasters and everything else that have happened, I can only hope, it's maybe hard to prove, but I do believe that it's helped prevent future, you know, similar disasters. And if and when one should happen again, if the things that RCAC is supposed to do are being done, then it should be responded to in a much more effective way. But you don't want to know that.
Right.
From having to test it,
yes,
in reality.
Yeah.
So I don't know. God, there's a lot to think about with this.
There is a lot to think about with
Jesus,
this.
Jesus, I can't even...
I know.
Oh.
Well,
God, I almost feel sorry for you. It's like, how are you ever going to...
Well, I'll tell
get
you.
Get this down to manageable...
Well, when I get 110 pages from Ricky...